But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I'd like to open up in prayer. Father God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for your word. We thank you for making time for each one of us, oh God. We know the time that we were allowed to create to meditate on your word today. Soften our hearts and open our minds as we journey deep within your word. Lord, reveal something to us each day that can just draw us a little more near to you. In your name I pray. Amen. So this week's Crossing the Red Sea is coming from Numbers, and the portion name is, if you were looking at it in the Hebrew text, is Bahalateka. And it's an interesting portion. Lateka, it literally means when you raise up. And in this portion, we find some interesting statistics. We have 136 verses, 1,332 words, 2,290 letters. The number of commandments that we find in this section of this week is two positive commandments. And those commandments are the lighting of the menorah and the Levite's age for service. And it's a very interesting, fun thing when you look at some of this Old Testament stuff, because there's something revealed here. There's a connection between this lighting of the menorah and the priesthood, if you will, the servants of God, the servants of the people whom have no land, come of age to serve God. Numbers chapter 8, 1 through 14. Do we have someone willing to read for us today?
I can do it. Preparing the lamps. The Lord said to Moses, "Give Aaron the following instructions. When you set up the seven lamps in the lampstand, place them so their light shines forward in front of the lampstand." So Aaron did this. He set up the seven lamps so they reflected their light forward, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. The entire lampstand, from its base to its decorative blossoms, was made of beaten gold. It was built according to the exact design the Lord had shown Moses. The Levites dedicated. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Now set the Levites apart from the rest of the people of Israel and make them ceremonially clean. Do this by sprinkling them with the water of purification and have them shave their entire body and wash their clothing. Then they will be ceremonially clean. Have them bring a young bull and a grain offering of choice flour moistened with olive oil, along with a second youngling bull for a sin offering. Then assemble the whole community of Israel and present the Levites at the entrance of the tabernacle. When you present the Levites before the Lord, the people of Israel must lay their hands on them. Raising his hands, Aaron must then present the Levites to the Lord as a special offering from the people of Israel, thus dedicating them to the Lord's service. Next, the Levites will lay their hands on the heads of the young bulls, present one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering to the Lord, to purify the Levites and make them right with the Lord. Then have the Levites stand in front of Aaron and his sons and raise your hands and present them as a special offering to the Lord. In this way, you will set the Levites apart from the rest of the people of Israel, and the Levites will belong to me.
Much so. Let's chew this up. But there's some very key points here in the lighting of the menorah. When he refers to lighting the menorah, and he's saying hold it forward, that it is that the light will stand forward. And so you have this, you have them light these lamps, and they're supposed to have it facing forward. And when you think about the spiritual significance of that, think of the song, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm Gonna Let It Shine." That the light of God needs to be going forward, and that imagery is there. And in the same time, you give this commandment. He wraps up in this whole section two commandments back to back of the coming of age, right? That these two are connected, that these lamps being lit or lit is almost this symbolism of the Levites into service. And so when we look at this, about keeping, you know, find where Christ makes a reference about the virgins keeping their lanterns trimmed and ready to go. There's always this reference about, you know, maintaining your light. And here we have this, we open up with this beautiful menorah, the light shining forward, and see the imagery as well of the Levite saying, hey, when you turn 25, you are now of age of service. And then there's a cutoff, there's a retirement, right? To 50, there's a 25 years. And so it's a fun look at that when you see how God sets people apart. He has a set time of service, similar to lighting the lamps, your time to service. We know that there's a limitation to service, right? He doesn't ask you to more than what you can bear, right? And everything has its time and place. Before we get within this reading, we're talking about Abraham, and next Sunday we're going to talk about Abraham. And I wanted to just review real quickly the 10 tests that Abraham went through. And when we look at the 10 tests, one is the call to leave his homeland. That's that lech lechi, or to go out. It's similar to when God told them to go out of the ark. And it's a play on the next week, in a sense, that he tells Abraham to go out from your father's home, from your family's house, right? The second test was the famine in the land of Canaan. The third test was Sarah being taken by Pharaoh. The fourth test was the war against the four kings. The fifth test was a covenant between the pieces. The sixth test, his circumcision at old age. The seventh test is when Sarah again gets taken by Abimelech, right? The eighth test is the expulsion of Hagar and Ishmael. When Abraham sends Hagar and Ishmael away, a test of emotional obedience. The ninth test was his command to sacrifice Isaac, the Akedah. We're going to talk about that on Sunday. The ultimate test of loyalty and surrender. And the 10th test, interestingly, is the purchase of a burial plot for Sarah, instinct on paying for Sarah's burial site, a test of humility and patience. We're going to review these 10 tests next week as well in depth. Realizing here we are in the middle of test. Do we have someone willing to read for us Genesis chapter 17, 15 to 22? Thank you, Sister Pat. Oh, yes, ma'am. Very well.
Thank you. Okay. God also said to Abraham, as for Sarah, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name now will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. King of peoples will come from her. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessings. Then God said, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. I will surely bless him. I will make him fruitful and will greatly increase his numbers. He will be the father of 12 rulers, and I will make him into a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. When he had finished speaking with Abraham, God went up from him.
So this is a beautiful exchange between Abraham and God, right? I mean, it sounds almost like a casual conversation, but let's talk about this a little bit. Now, we know the name Isaac means to laugh. My son's name is Isaac, and yes, he definitely can make you laugh. And part of it had to do is when Sarah overheard in the tent next, she laughed, and she thought, what are you talking about, right? And so there's this, you find this interesting parallel in the Abram story and the Abraham story, where their minor little behaviors set the trajectory for the years to come. And when we look at the 10 tests of Abraham, we find that he comes to these different crossroads, and many times he doesn't really recognize, or the crossroads, I should say, are not very obvious. And I think we can glean from this is that We each go through this life and we come across crossroads that maybe they don't have signs on them that says turn left or danger ahead, or we come to these crossroads and sometimes the path we should take is grown over and the path we shouldn't is paved and well lit, right? And so when we look at this, let's look at some of these crossroads. When God said to Abraham, he says, for your wife Sarah, you're no longer to call her Sarai, but her name shall be Sarah. There's a name change. So God is saying, Abraham, I need to get your attention. Remember, I changed your name. I'm going to change her name too. And I'm going to bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will become a mother of nations. And this is an interesting thing because a lot of times we look at Isaac as being a blessing to Abraham. But God is very clear that his intention on the bracha or the blessing here is to bless Sarah. She's getting a name change, and her old age and her womb will be open. Two amazing miracles are being prophesied here. And God is saying, hey, this is what's going to happen. And look how Abraham responds. Abraham fell face down. And here we go. He laughed to himself. There's that Isaac word again, right? He laughed and he said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? Right? And it's interesting how he questions God. And we have tons of examples of intercessory prayer with Abraham, but what I really like to look at is look at his back and forth with the Almighty. Yeah, he falls face down, but he still has this audacity. He still has the chutzpah to still speak boldly before the Almighty. And I think we should be encouraged that if we can be humble before the Almighty, but also speak boldly our concerns. And Abraham, ever so boldly, he has a certain fondness of Ishmael. I mean, when you hear the stories of Ishmael, he kind of was a man's man, a good archer, buff and smart. And Abraham is thinking, hey, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. And this is one of those beautiful crossroads, is that sometimes when God says, hey, what you change a plan? You thought you were going this way. I'm going to send you that way. Sometimes we can maybe get a little stubborn, throw our hands up, and not have the best attitude and miss out on a blessing. But Abraham, rather than really argue with God, he asked for clarity and then he asked for a blessing. When God gives you new direction, be humble, but be bold. And ask God for a blessing. He is a loving God and a powerful God, and he hears you. So then it says, look, like he was, God says, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son. Like he's like, I hear you, but my plan and my thing, I'm God, I'm calling the shots here. And I'm not going to take the blessing away from Sarah. Abraham was arguably trying to wrestle a blessing from Sarah. He said, well, can't we just, give this to Ishmael? And I love this because sometimes we think that it's zero sum. We think God only has enough to bless this person or that person, right? And I love it. I remember, you're not to be covetous, right? You don't say, I want that house. You say, I hope the Lord can bless me with a house like that, right? Because God can bless your neighbor and can bless you too, right? And so here, Abraham, he's asking, hey, could Ishmael live on this blessing? And God doubles down and says, yeah, I'll give him that blessing. But your wife, Sarah, will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. And the beauty of this, again, is when Abraham asks for the second blessing, right? Now you find the name is even established. And he goes, and I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. And then beautifully, he says, as for Ishmael, I have heard you. I will surely bless him. I remember Abraham once was bartering for if there was any enough righteous people in a city. And here he's asking for a blessing. And we see once again, the great negotiator Abraham has found his way to get a double bracha, a double blessing. And there's really, he gets blessed twice over. Hagar gets a blessing, and Sarah gets a blessing. You have a name change and a name given. It's very powerful. All this from one of the promises. And then you have this dynamic you find later on. He'll be the father of 12 rulers, and I will make him into a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you, and God puts a time on it by this time next year. And I love this as one of the other parts that's overlooked. When he had finished speaking with Abraham, God went up from him. There's always this sense of completion when you talk to the Almighty, and it's a very powerful exchange. But here we have, and all of this power, might Abraham is presented with a crossroad, and in the middle of that crossroad, rather than to, bicker or throw his hands up, no, he was eager for a blessing. And you find the same thing happens later with Jacob when he's wrestling with an angel. And he says, "Give me my blessing." See, he learned something from his grandfather, right? That when you're going through something, when God is blessing you, and it's maybe to change a plan, maybe it's not what you had in mind, don't fight God. Just ask him for another blessing. Trust me, it works, and you'll get these blessings. So let's keep on going. This text here about Abraham's righteous faith, we talked about this coming from Romans, and I believe this is our Tuesday reading for today. I definitely want to do our Tuesday reading. Is anyone, I know we got a small class today, but we have someone ever so bold to read Romans chapter 4, 1 through 15?
Again, Abraham's righteous faith. What then shall we say that Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh, discovered in this matter? If, in fact, Abraham was justified by works, he had something to boast about, but not before God. What does Scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Now, to the one who works, wages are not credited as a gift, but as an obligation. However, to the one who does not work, but trusts God, who justifies the ungodly, their faith is credited as righteousness. David says the same thing when he speaks of the blessedness of the one whom God credits righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord will never count against them. Is this blessedness only for the circumcised or also for the uncircumcised? We have been saying that Abraham's faith was credited to him as righteousness. Under what circumstances was it credited? Was it after he was circumcised or before? It was not after, but before. And he received circumcision as a sign, a seal of the righteousness that he had by faith while he was still uncircumcised. So then he is the father of all who believe but have not been circumcised, in order that righteousness might be credited to them. And he is then also the father of the circumcised, who not only are circumcised, but who also follow in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. It was not through the law that Abraham and his offspring received the promise that he would be heir of the world, but through the righteousness that comes by faith. For if those who depend on the law are heirs, faith means nothing and the promise is worthless, because the law brings wrath, and where there is no law, there is no transgression.
Amen. So there's a lot in here to chew up in this reading here. Let's chew this up a little bit. So Abraham's righteous faith, and this is being in the book of Romans, of course. And so we got to know our audience here is that, we're looking at people who, the gospel is spreading, and then there's these new believers, and they're not, and they don't have all the same customs. They weren't raised in it. And so now there's this, wait a minute, do I need to be circumcised or not? And we understand that there's the physical component of it, but the biggest part is being circumcised in your heart. But there is this cultural thing of, hey, there's this commandment that, on the eighth day, you're supposed to do the Bris Milah, you're supposed to be circumcised, and I didn't do this. Am I not? Is there no hope for me? Right? And then we're reminded ever so beautifully that Abraham, that, first off, we said earlier, that was one of the 10 tests. And there was a time when Abraham, remember when the angels came to him, was after God had commanded him to be circumcised. And he was sitting outside on a hot day and in very much pain. And the angels come, and then he goes and shows them this great hospitality, this radical hospitality in the middle of his pain and obedience. But his promise, the one we just read earlier, that happens prior. And so here is so eloquently pointed out that no, that Abraham got a promise before the change. And I think this should be very encouraging for new believers, especially when we're talking about the Great Commission. Because sometimes when people first start hanging around, the parish, if you would, and God's people, they see all these people living righteous and doing things and God blessing them, and they think, well, how can I ever measure up? And we say, no. The promise comes first. And then God will give you some commandments. And as He give you those commandments, the more you walk with Him, He'll give you the intestinal fortitude and the strength to abide by His commandments that He gives you. This is what happened with Abraham, that when a person or a soul says, what must I do to be saved? You just say, answer as Abraham did at the top of Mount Moriah and say, Hineni, or yes, Lord, here I am. And watch as God will provide the sacrifices. God will make ways and open doors for you. And so it's very an encouragement there that Abraham received his blessings before he got the law. Much like in the Exodus story, you find the children of Israel receive their freedom and their blessing and their promise before Moses comes down with these 10 commandments, these 10 statements. And before, all of the different laws were written, and they already were called out and separated and blessed. God paved the way for them. He fed them. He made sure their clothes never worn out. And this was all before they were given the law. And speaking of the Passover, and this week as well, we have Bamidbar 9, 1 through 14. And I'll read this one to be a team player. And this is actually the real meat of this one. A year after Israel's departure from Egypt, the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. In the first month of that year, he said, tell the Israelites to celebrate the Passover at the prescribed time at twilight on the 14th day of the first month. Be sure to follow all my decrees and regulations concerning the celebration. So Moses told the people to celebrate the Passover in the wilderness of Sinai as twilight fell on the 14th day of the month. And they celebrated the festival there just as the Lord had commanded Moses. But some of the men had been ceremonially defiled by touching a dead body, so they could not celebrate the Passover that day. Then Moses and Aaron that day and said, we have become ceremonially unclean by touching a dead body, but why should we be prevented from presenting the Lord's offering at the proper time with the rest of the Israelites? Moses answered, wait here until I have received instructions for you from the Lord. And this was the Lord's reply to Moses. Give the following instructions to the people of Israel. If any of the people now or in the future generations are ceremonially unclean at Passover time because of touching a dead body, or if they are on a journey and cannot present at the ceremony, they may still celebrate the Lord's Passover. They must offer the Passover sacrifice 1 month later at twilight on the 14th day of the second month. They must eat the Passover lamb at the time with the bitter salad greens and bread made without yeast. They must not leave any lamb until the next morning, and they must not break any of its bones. They must follow all the normal regulations concerning the Passover. But those who neglected to serve or to celebrate the Passover at the regular time, even though they are ceremonial clean and not away on a trip, will be cut off from the community of Israel. If they fail to present the Lord's offering at the proper time, they will suffer the consequences of their guilt. And if a foreigner living among you want to celebrate the Passover to the Lord, they must follow these same decrees and regulations. Same laws apply to both native-born and Israelites, to the foreigners living among you. This is another powerful, powerful message, and it's kind of hidden into this law. And sometimes we start reading about sacrifices and Passovers, and people want to just skip over it because we're like, oh, I don't know about that. But we'll all have a steak on Sunday, and we don't think twice about it. So let's chew this up here. Let's have a little second Passover steak. So the one thing I want to point out is in verse 8. This is the crux right here. This is awesome. Well, before we get to verse 8, there's the question. And remember, when we're in the Old Testament, whenever you see a question, bing, 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 it's like lights flashing, like God is trying to tell you about something, right? When you see a question, it's like that song, God is trying to tell somebody, right? And so they come to him and they said, we have become ceremonially unclean by touching a dead body, but why should we be prevented from presenting the Lord's offering at the proper time with the rest? These people wanted to be included. They said, you know, hey, I'm commanded to do this because these are the same people that have to take care of the dead bodies. And they said, I'm unclean because of it. Now I feel like I'm getting punished. And I can't have the opportunity to fulfill a commandment because, see, many times we look at commandments as like the do's and don'ts, but really they're gifts that God gives us. And we have the opportunity to fulfill a commandment. We should look each day and wake up, well, I wonder how many commandments I can do, you know? And before Moses answered, this is the true leadership of Moses here. Wait here until I have received instruction for you from the Lord. I imagine in Moses' heart, he was like, yeah, you're right. I got an idea. Let's compromise. Moses already learned when he, you know, made some quick thinking on his feet. It didn't work out too good. By this time in his career of following God, he learned, I'm going to wait on the Lord. You ask a really good question. And you know, I've been at this for a while. Let me get back to you. I'm going to wait. Let's wait at this point. And I think we can glean that sometimes we're presented with difficult questions, whether we're in a position of leadership. And this is not just in the church, because God has called us to be the salt of the earth. When we're in positions of leadership, when we're in position even of obedience, where we're presented with a difficult question and we may feel pressure to answer haphazardly. But if we are God's people and chosen people, then we answer surely. And when it comes to especially matters of faith and receiving of God, we need to make sure that we have the discipline of patience and the discipline of listening for the Almighty, the discipline of bringing that inquiry to the Lord. Earlier, we read how Abraham questioned God, but he didn't question God with doubt. He questioned God for clarity. And here we have where Moses is asked a question. And he says, let us go and question God for clarity. And you see the running theme here is that many times we may be presented with difficult choices, difficult situations, a spiritual dilemma. Many times our spiritual dilemma is an abundance of blessings, but in the middle of that, if we have the discipline to not question God for who he is, but question God for clarity to make sure we got it right. We're going to find out more about that on Sunday when we talk about the Akedah and Isaac about questioning God. And so we find that God gives us this extra provision on being inclusive. But there's this, he says, yeah, you can do this the next month, easy peasy, but you got to do it this way. He gives them all the rules. You got to do it the same way. But he puts this other little thing in there. There's two pieces in here. He says, now this isn't like a makeup day for the people that slept in. You had to be ceremonially unclean or traveling and have a legitimate reason then. But if you're just, there's no, I'm just going to be lazy and no, I can do it this. No, this is a discipline. And I think this is something we can also glean from is that sometimes we'll watch God bless somebody with a second chance. And we'll say, well, I should get a second chance. And God's like, well, no, you don't need a second chance. You had all the opportunity the first time around. You find that God is providing equity here. And you see that equity extends to the foreigner living among them. And I know then that we look in the news today and we can see all kind of turmoil and unrest in our nation when it comes down to how we treat the foreigners living among us. And I pray that maybe we could go back to the roots of our scripture and see how inclusive the Almighty is. But he also did have, some pretty strict rules, and the same rules apply to everybody. But you find that God makes these rules to meet us where we are constantly. God is always, basically, God is a handicap accessible God. He meets you where you are and makes provisions for you when you don't think they're there. And when he asks you to do something, as we read earlier, just, a question for clarity and ask for a blessing. So I want to move on before we run out of time. I'm almost about to wrap up here. I wanted to go into the call of Abraham and his promise, but before we get that in this week, I wanted to just kind of review before we run out of time all of the key points. As you do the reading from Friday to Friday, the themes of the Deuteronomy readings. You have the lighting of the menorah, the spiritual illumination begins. You have the Levites' dedication, the transfer of sacred service at age from 25 to 50, where now, so you with God saying, this is how you light the candles, and in the same time, or I'm sorry, the torches, and in the same time he says, this is how you light the torches and hold the flame forward. He says, and this is the age that my servants will come of age. So these are my lanterns going forward. Right, you have Pesach Sheni, the redemption for the delayed. So we just read when we talking about that extra provision that God allowed there. That was redemption. That's the very definition of redemption, right? Earlier, there's this the cloud over the camp. Or I'm sorry. Later on, we go and it's the movement with this divine rhythm. You have the cloud, the fire by night, the cloud by day. There's this the divine rhythm, and it's a beautiful thing. Also, we have the silver trumpets, the sound signals unity and war. And when you get to chapter 10, it's going to be the departure from Sinai, and the ark leads the mission, the covenant, the ark of the covenant. We're led in the covenant. And when we get to chapter 11, it talks about the craving of meat and the rejection of manna, regression, and the consequences of that. Sometimes when God gives us all these blessings, and sometimes we get tired of our blessings and we can become bitter, and it leads us to Meribah or the bitter waters. We want to be careful of this. We should enjoy our manna, even if we have to have it every day. And then when we get to 11, the 70 elders, the shared spirit and leadership. And then finally, in chapter 12, you have Miriam and Aaron's challenge, and it's basically the struggle between pride and prophetic humility. So with that overview, we're gonna read this last few sections here. Do we have someone willing to read for us this section of Genesis chapter 12, 1 through 7, the blessings to all the nations and the call of Abraham?
I'll read it. The Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to a land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all people on earth will be blessed through you." So Abraham went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moriah and Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him.
So we talked earlier about the 10 tests. This is the Lech Lechi, or to go out from the Father's house. Here we find this place, and we've talked about this before with Shechem, right? And And there's this altar bit here. Now, if you were to write in your notes here about Shechem, you'll find that there is this is where the story of Dina happens, where the brothers, basically slaughter this town. Well, let's start back and let's go back. Well, Dina was raped, and then the rapist said, "Oh, I'll marry." And so the whole town agreed to get circumcised, and then the brothers, when they were, in their fever, went and did them in. That was the land of Shechem. And then when their father's saying, Isaac's going, or Jacob is saying, what did you do? And they go, oh, this was our sister. And he goes, what do you mean? That was my daughter. You've brought more trouble in our house by what you're doing. So there's a lot that happens in this land of Shechem. And more we journey to the Old Testament, we see this. And whenever the ark is set out, Moses would shout, arise, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered. Let them flee before you. And when the ark was set down, he would say, return, O Lord, to the countless thousands of Israel. Right? And this is where we have this, where soon the people began to complain about their hardship, and the Lord heard everything they said. Then the Lord's anger blazed against them, and he sent fire to rage among them, and he destroyed some of the people in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people screamed to Moses for help. And when he prayed to the Lord, the fire stopped. After that, the area was known as Taberah, which means the place of burning, because the fire from the Lord had burned among them there. The foreign rabble who were traveling with the Israelites began to crave the good things of Egypt. And the people of Israel also began to complain. Oh, for some meat, they exclaimed. We remember the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt, and we had all the cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic we wanted, but now our appetites are gone. All we ever see is this manna. The manna looked like small corn seeds, and it was pale, yellow like gum resin. The people would go out and gather it from the ground, and they made flour by grinding it with the hand mills or pounding it with mortars. Then they boiled it in a pot and made it into flat cakes. And these cakes tasted like pastries baked with olive oil. The manna came down on the camp with the dew during the night. Moses heard all the families standing in the doorways of their tents whining. The Lord became extremely angry. Moses was also very aggravated. And Moses said to the Lord, why are you treating me, your servant, so harshly? Have mercy on me. What did I do to deserve the burden of all these people? Did I give birth to them? Did I bring them into the world? Why did you tell me to carry them in my arms like a mother carries a nursing baby? How can I carry them to the land you swore to give their ancestors? Where am I supposed to get the meat for all these people? They keep whining to me, saying, give us meat to eat. I can't carry all these people by myself. The load is far too heavy. If this is how you intend to treat me, just go ahead and kill me. Do me a favor and spare me this misery. Moses chooses 70 leaders. Watch this. Then the Lord said to Moses, gather before me 70 men who are recognized as elders and leaders of Israel. Bring them to the tabernacle and stand there with you. I will come down and talk to you there. I will take some of the spirit that is upon you, and I will put the spirit upon them also, and they will bear the burden of the people with you, so you will not have to carry it. And say to the people, purify yourselves, for tomorrow you will have meat to eat. You were whining, and the Lord heard you when you cried, oh, for some meat. We were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will have to eat it. And it won't be just for a day or two, it'll be for 5 or 10 or even 20. You will eat it for a whole month until you gag and are sick of it. For you have rejected the Lord who is here among you. You've been whining to him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? But Moses responded to the Lord, there are 100,000 foot soldiers here with me, and yet you say, I will give them meat for a whole month. Even if we butchered all of our flocks and herd, would that satisfy them? Even if we caught all the fish in the sea, would that be enough? Then the Lord said to Moses, has my arm lost power? Now you will see whether or not my word comes true. So Moses went out and reported the Lord's words to the people, and he gathered the 70 elders and he stationed around the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in a cloud and spoke to Moses, and he gave the 70 elders the same spirit that was upon Moses. And when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. But this never happened again. Two men, Eldad and Medad, had stayed behind in the camp, and they were listening among the elders, but they had not gone out to the tabernacle. Yet the Spirit rested upon them as well, so they prophesied there in the camp. A young man ran and reported to Moses, "Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp." Joshua, the son of Nun, who also had been Moses' assistant since his youth, protested, "Moses, my master, make them stop." But Moses replied, "Are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord will put his spirit upon all them." Longest section of this week's reading, but here we see the foreshadowing of the Christ. This is when you find Christ refers to Moses, and he talks about this a little bit, but here Moses is saying, "Oh, I would wish that the Lord's people were, and that the Lord would put his spirit upon all of them." And earlier we read how Abraham, when he was given conflict, he asked for an extra blessing. These words that Moses said to Joshua, son of Nun, would not fall on deaf ears, because we know today that the Spirit of God has been made accessible to fall on all flesh. Also, we can glean here that when we look at this leadership dynamic, sometimes we forget how human Moses was. And there's all this complaining and grumbling. And on Sunday, we talked about Noah's Ark and, 10 months locked in a boat. I mean, we all went through COVID. That was something else. Sometimes when God takes us through things, and now these 600,000 people are arguably in a giant ark. And there's some backbiting and some bitterness, and the temperaments get going. And I think we need to remind ourselves and our families and our work groups and our church homes that sometimes when things get tough, we can get a little prickly one to another. Sometimes we can mouth off a little bit. But we can see that, look, even when God is showing his wrath, he is still showing mercy. He says, "I'll give you meat." The underlying thing as well is many times we have this vision that manna just fell down like hot cakes from the sky. But as we read here today, there was a lot of work that they had to do to make manna into bread. And sometimes we can ask God for our blessing, and we want just bread just to fall from the sky. But God says, "No, I want you to scoop it up. You got to grind it up. You got to mix it up. You got to do this." And there's all these different steps. And I'm pretty certain as they were eating the meat for days on end, then they wanted their manna again. They started realizing that, that exercise felt good in the preparation. So in closing, when we look at the insight of the hidden path and the rising flame, their path, we look at Psalm 77, 19. That was the first psalm this week. Says, "Your path led through the sea, your way through mighty waters, through your footprints were not seen." Right? And so when we think about how God kept them in the ark, and the water comes back, we think about when they crossed the Red Sea and then the water comes back. God has this way of carrying us through. And it's like almost like we don't see his footprints, but we know that the poem of the footprints. And sometimes God works in such a mysterious way that we look back and we could not really realize how far he brought us. And maybe we can take the same attitude that Moses took. And I love how God listened to Moses. Moses is griping about their griping. He's whining to God about their whining. And still, as much as Moses kind of talked out of line, you find that God was still merciful to everyone. So when we look at the final thought here for today before we close out in prayer, the reason the path to the sea was hidden is because God wants us to walk it again in every generation with our own footsteps, guided by flame and faith. And when we look at the lesson today of lighting the torches and coming of the age of service and finding your way through the wilderness, they were finding their own way with the Almighty. In the same way Israel and Moses were finding their way to the wilderness, we each are set upon our own wilderness experience. This is the way the Almighty designed it as we walk with Him. So that's our lesson for the day as we just review in the scripture text. I encourage each one of you to read your daily reading. This is just an overview, and hopefully, as you read the readings, more will be revealed to you. I just tried to lay the railroad tracks today. Does anybody have any questions before we close out in prayer?
Have a blessed
You too.